Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock album. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio we go back to the swamps for some of the best from the original Lynyrd Skynyrd.
So we got together the next day in Bob Burns' carport, and we played, you know, Little Black Egg and Get Off My Cloud.
Yes!
That was Louie Louie, and, you know, yes. We were a hit. So that's the way it really started.
And Lynyrd Skynyrd started on that ball diamond.
On that ball diamond with Bob Burns getting his headlights knocked out by Ronnie.
Ronnie laid down the law to me. You know, he said, you're a new kid on the block, you know, and things are going to be done my way. And he said it in no uncertain terms, and I just sat there and went, yep, yes, sir. I got the message. That's all I can say. I didn't want to argue with him because I just felt he was right, you know. It was his band. Ronnie was Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Mr. Breeze.
Hi, this is Gary Rosten.
Hi, this is Ed King of the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band.
In the studio for Lynyrd Skynyrd, part one.
One thing that's never been questioned about Southern rock legends Lynyrd Skynyrd is their unassailable authenticity, then and now. Guitarist Gary Rossington, Alan Collins, and Ed King, keyboard player Billy Powell, bass player Leon Wilkerson, drummer Bob Burns, and singer-lyricist Ronnie Van Zant were the real deal. And in that spirit, the original Lynyrd Skynyrd 6 albums, Pronounced, Second Helping, Nothing Fancy, Give Me Back My Bullets, The Live, One More from the Road, and The Bittersweet Street Survivors, have all been lovingly remastered on premium heavy vinyl and packaged in original artwork and boxed up in a handsome set. Fitting for a band that started in a most unpretentious and all-American setting, a baseball game in Jacksonville, Florida. For the play-by-play, here's Gary Rossington with me in the studio.
There was two neighborhoods. There was the West Side. That's where me and Ronnie and Bob Burns, our first drummer, came from. And then there was Cedar Hills. That was like the big, cool part of town where you had a pool in your backyard and everything. That's where Alan came from. And his family was a little bit better off. But we all met in high school, and we played baseball. Here's a good story. The way we really started was Bob Burns was our original drummer, and me. We were best friends in high school growing up, and we played baseball. We were on the Little League, Pop Warner Little League team. So we were playing ball one day, and we went to see the big guys play, and they were the Green Pigs. That was the name of the team, the Green Pigs. They were, hey, the guys in Florida, if they ever hear this interview, they're going to get mad if they hear you laughing, because the Green Pigs were the Green, you know, they
the
were
Green
the,
Pigs.
Yeah. Anyway, we went to see the Green Pigs, and Ronnie was on that team. We didn't know him at that. We knew of him because he was a badass and he could beat you up. But we just knew of him. So we went to watch him. We were watching him, and so after two or three innings went by, you know, we got bold and we went down on the field. We were in the dugouts. We knew everybody. So about the end of the game, we were right on the field with him, and Bob Burns was on the third baseline with the coach because he knew the coach, and we were watching the game, and Ronnie got with the bat, and he went swung and missed, and then went bam and hit a line drive smack into Bob Burns right between his eyes.
Oh.
Knocked him slap out. We thought he was dead.
Oh.
And Ronnie went running over there and went, oh, God, I killed this guy. It's terrible. We woke him. He finally woke up and went, what's your name? And Bob, you know. So after the game, we said who we were, and I'm Gary, and you're Ronnie, and you're Bob, and we went, and Ronnie went, yeah, don't you play drums? And Bob went, yeah, and he's still crying. And he went, yes, I do. And Ronnie went, well, I sing, and he went, I was a little fat kid, second baseman. I was a real good ball player, and he went, don't you have a guitar? If you had, it didn't matter if you played or you were good. It's just if you
just
had one.
Just if you had one, you
went,
were cool.
Yeah, I got one. You know, I was still paying for it through my paper out, but I went, yeah, I got one. So we said, well, let's practice tomorrow. And then the next day, after we said, well, let's go rehearse tomorrow, or not rehearse, but let's go play tomorrow. in your carport, because his it was whose mother would let them play at their house.
That was very important.
That wasn't where you were going to rehearse. It was
or whether
mom.
You knew any the right licks.
I could talk my mother into it. So
you were cool.
And so we were driving down the road. Ron was the only one. He was 16 or 17. We were still 15. So he had his own car, and he was driving. So we were driving down the road, and here comes this guy on a purple Swin bicycle with butterfly handlebars, driving down the road 50 miles an hour, and Bob went, "There's Alan." And we didn't even know Alan. He went, "Who's that?" And he went, "He got a guitar, too. He's got a guitar." And so we went, and slid on brakes on Lakeshore Boulevard. And Ronnie, like I said, he was a badass. He had a bad name. He had a reputation of being
tough
guy. If you said something bad to him, he'd beat you up, yeah. And he could do it, too. But anyway, we slammed our brakes and jumped out of the car, and Alan saw Ronnie, and he took off the other way.
Man. Oh!
And we had to chase him down in the car. And we went, "Alan," and Bob, Alan knew Bob. He went, "Alan, it's me." He went, "When do you just want to talk?" So Alan stopped and went, "Okay." He was running. And so we went, "Hey, we're going to get together and play guitars and sing tomorrow. You want to do it?" And he went, "Okay." And we wanted him because he was the only guy in town that knew "Get Off My Cloud" by the Stones. That was bar chords, see? We just knew regular folk chords. And so he was my hero because he knew bar chords. I don't even think he wanted to come the next day because he was scared he was going to get beat up. But he kind of got bossed into it. So, and you know what? He was in a band called The Mods.
Alan Collins.
Yeah. So we had to go over and threaten The Mods that we would whip their asses unless they could give Alan his amp and guitar back so we could practice. So we got together the next day in Bob Burns' carport, and we played, you know, Little Black Egg and Get Off My Cloud.
Yes!
That and Louie, and, you know, we were a hit. So that's the way it really started. And
Leonard Skinner started on that ball diamond.
On that ball diamond with Bob Burns getting his headlights knocked out by Ronnie.
From the outset, a hallmark of Ronnie Van Zant's songwriting was an innate ability to see the colorful characters and lively adventures in everyday life. And Gary Rossington says, "Gimme Three Steps" is a perfect example.
We were in it's a place in Jacksonville called W.D. West Tavern, and that's a bar, of course. So we went in there, and at the time we were 17, and you had to be 18 to get in. I mean, this was right the year the law changed to where you could be 18, not 21, to drink. And we were still 16, 17, but we, you know, how fake IDs were and stuff.
Then.
So we could get in this W.T. West Tavern. So we went in one day, me and Ronnie and Alan, I never danced my whole life. We always played so people could dance. I've never been able to. But anyway, this girl came over and asked Ronnie to dance because he was older, you know. So they went out and they started twisting and doing the monkey. And this guy come in and said, "Hey, man, that's my girl. You better get, what are you doing dancing?" And he went, "Hey, I'm just having fun." So we went right out 5 minutes after that. And the guy was big and bad, too. So he was like, you know,
now, wait a minute. Now, Ronnie had the rep of being the biggest best, so this must have been
Ronnie
Big John.
Wasn't big.
Or something.
Ronnie was little, but he was real mean, and
tough.
He was a street fighter. He'd just soon pick up a bottle and cuss you as look at you if in a fight, or, you know, he would always creep you. But he's like Leroy Brown, you know.
Yes.
He was a razor-toting guy, too. Mm. I mean, he'd cut you if you wasn't looking. Anyway, this guy, you know, he was really going to whip Ronnie for dancing with his girlfriend. They were in a little fight, and the only reason the girl was dancing with Ronnie because she was fighting with her boyfriend.
To get him
so
jealous.
So when
and
we
it
left,
worked.
And Ronnie literally said, he didn't say, "Give me three steps." He said, "Please let me leave." And the guy pulled a gun and said, "I'm going to blow your brains," you know. And Ronnie went, "Please just let me leave. I don't know the girl. I don't want to see her again." And he turned around, and he didn't say, "Give me three steps." He said, "If you're going to shoot me, you're going to have to shoot me in the ass or elbows." And we started walking out the door, and me and Alan seen Ronnie walking, so we walked. And we got out of the car, and we rode it, driving back to the house.
Everybody in the original Lynyrd Skynyrd band grew up together in Jacksonville, Florida, except for guitar player Ed King, who they'd met when Ed was a member of California pop psychedelic band, the Strawberry Alarm Clock. After that band broke up, Gary Rossington and Ronnie Van Zant of Lynyrd Skynyrd heard that Ed King was playing with a bar band up in North Carolina.
Me and Ronnie drove from Jacksonville, Florida to North Carolina. It took like 9 or 10 hours drive. When we got there, we were burnt out and tired, and we got there, and the band Ed was playing with, we had to listen to 2 sets with him playing. We listened, and we were going, yeah, he's good. He's playing guitar. So after it was over, we went up, and we said, are you ready, Ed? And Ed hadn't told his band he was leaving to go with us.
One small detail.
Yeah, so the band went, overlooked. What? You can't quit. We got 2 more. And so they jumped on me and Ronnie, and we beat them up real quick. And Ed grabbed his amp and guitar, and we threw it in the trunk. And we were really fighting these guys, hitting them, as we jumped in the car and left to go back to Florida. And I think the last guy we hit, you know, was just a bass player or something, saying, Ed, you can't leave, you can't leave. And we went, but that was, we were rednecks, you know. Yeah, one of the fight nights.
One of the fight nights.
Can't believe I used to do that all the time. But anyway, que sera, sera.
So you kidnapped Ed back.
Kidnapped Ed, and we had him. He was a guitar player now.
Okay, so now.
That's what brought about 3 guitar players. The only people that ever did before that time was the Buffalo Springfield. But we didn't copy them, of course. We never sound like them, but they were the only group that had 3 guitars.
I never thought of that. Good point.
And Ed, with the Alarm Clock, they used to tour together, Alarm Clock and Springfield. And actually, that's where we first saw the Alarm Clock, was on the Springfield tour. We just decided since they had it, we could have 3 guitars. So lots of groups now have 3 guitars. We tried to structure the songs where they all interlocked, what, like the rhythm parts and the leads, and they kind of all fit each other. And it took us like weeks to do this when we first started. We didn't just start, you know, playing all together and playing the same thing. Everybody had their own part and their own style. Like Ed has his own way of playing, and Alan had his own way, and I got my own way, and that's the only reason it worked, because we all were so different, we could fit. We couldn't play. I couldn't play what Alan could play, and I couldn't play what Ed could, and they couldn't play what I could. You know, we couldn't copy each other. That's why we could play together. And nowadays, that don't make no sense, but back then it did.
Ed King may have had more professional experience than the Lynyrd Skynyrd band he was joining, but he was nevertheless impressed by Skynyrd's drive and dedication.
And we started rehearsing, and we rehearsed every day, 12 hours a day for 2-3 months. And I'd never been in a band that had done this before. It was like, you know, most musicians get up around noontime, but not Skynyrd, you know. Back in the days when they were hungry, they got up at 7 to be at rehearsal by 8.
You're kidding?
No, really disciplined, you know. I mean, they might get their rehearsal a little bit bug-eyed and kind of out of it, you know. But, you know, usually by 10 o'clock we were rolling, you know, and just go until the sun went down. We had a little farm that we rented at a little town called Green Cove Springs. We had a little cabin. Took a long time to get there. Once you, I mean, off the main road, it took you another 10 minutes to get back to the cabin. And it was right on a creek called McGirt's Creek. And we used to rehearse there, and one of us would have to spend the night out there every night, because one time we had equipment stolen. People come up in a boat in the river and walk off with the equipment. And it was really freaky out there at night, all the, you know, snakes and roaches and sounds. You know, I mean, this is like swamp. It was the swamps, really, is what it was. So we'd practice out there literally 10, 12 hours a day. And at this time, they were teaching me some of what they thought was their best material, which like was Give Me 3 Steps, I Ain't the One, Free Bird was one of the tunes we worked up, you know. And here I was playing bass and kind of disoriented, you know, because bass wasn't my instrument, and trying to really fit in some way on this thing.
After the Allman Brothers Band stunned the rock and roll world with their Live at Fillmore East double album in 1971, former Bob Dylan sideman and Blood, Sweat, and Tears founder Al Kooper had headed south from New York City looking for the next big thing. Kooper felt that he'd found it in Lynyrd Skynyrd, but the veteran producer was not prepared for the headstrong, stubborn streak that he found in his newly signed band, according to Ed King.
Out of Green Cove Springs, we worked up a song called Simple Man, and we went in. Now, that was not one of the tunes we played on the demos for Al Kooper. We went in the studio and said, Al, I want you to hear this tune. And we played it for Al, and he says, oh, I'm not going to let you guys record that. And Ronnie says, well, you got your car outside. Why don't you just go out in your car and go on home, and we'll just record it here without you. And Al said, well, you guys can't do that. And so Ronnie escorted him out to the car. He said, you either get out or right now or we're going to have some trouble. So Al Cooper left, and we stayed there that night and recorded Simple Man all by ourselves. And it turns out, to my, you know, this day, it's my one of my favorite Skinner songs of all time. You know, and I think even now it's one of Al Cooper's favorites. You know, he came back and ended up playing organ on it, you know. But everybody makes mistakes.
On their debut album, Pronounced, one of six original albums that have been remastered, packaged in the original artwork covers, pressed on premium vinyl, and boxed in a handsome set. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and a whole lot more online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Gary Rossington and Ed King for The Essential Lynyrd Skynyrd Part 1.
Hi, this is Gary Rossington.
Hi, this is Ed King of the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band.
In the studio for Lynyrd Skynyrd Part 1.
And I'm Redbeard, exploring The Essential Lynyrd Skynyrd. It probably comes as no surprise that the epic 9-minute song Freebird on Lynyrd Skynyrd's 1973 debut did not hatch and fly out of the nest the way you know it. Guitarist Gary Rossington reminds us that these things evolve from countless days of rehearsal and nights of playing high school dances, college frat parties, and bars.
We had written all these songs, and Freebird was like 5-6 years old when we recorded it.
Are you kidding
me? Actually, we have that song. Alan Collins wrote the music to it. He wrote the beginning. I wrote the end. But he wrote that beginning like 5 years before Ronnie could write lyrics to it. Ronnie always said, hey, there's too many chords. I can't write words to that many chords. And then one day, Ronnie went, hey, play them chords again. And he started going, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and he went, I can write. So he wrote the lyrics to Freebird.
So with the basic melody by Alan Collins and now lyrics by Ronnie Van Zant, Lynyrd Skynyrd's nightly performance of the song Freebird was not gaining much notice, except for one person standing side stage each night, and that was Billy Powell. Here's Gary Rossington again with Skynyrd's original bass player, the late Leon Wilkerson.
He was our roadie, man. Him and Kevin Elson was our sound man back then. They were our roadies. Billy Powell and Kevin Elson were our roadies, and then Kevin would do sound, too, and Billy just be our roadie. This happened for a year or two, I guess, and we didn't know he played piano. We just thought he was this goofy guy that carried our amps around. And one night we were playing at this, it was Bayview High School, and it was behind Lakeshore where we all went to high school, and we were playing there one night. And after the gig, it was just a high school dance. It started raining so hard, we couldn't load the equipment up. So we were all standing in the gym, the band and Billy and Kevin, just waiting for the rain to quit so we could load up. And there was a piano there, and Billy just out of nowhere said, you know what? If I ever had to play Freebird, this is the way I'd play it. And started playing it, you know, just the way he plays it today. He'd already wrote his part for it, and played it beautiful for about 5 or 10 minutes, and we were all crying and just going on. Oh, we couldn't believe it, and we fired him that night from being our roadie and hired him to be our piano player. And the next gig, he played Freebird and played just 2 or 3 songs with us. That's all he'd play. Then he'd be the roadie, and every gig he'd be a half roadie, half keyboard man.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just got it to where he was full keyboard. But that's his beginning story. And I remember him hauling them Marshalls around and just doing all this stuff and cussing us out. And they had, you know, in those days, that was really hard work. And we didn't pay him nothing. I think we gave him free beer and a ride to the shows and, you know, maybe a couple bucks. Yeah, a couple bucks and let him get on stage and play a song. That was his pay. But that was cool back then, you know. It was a dream of his, I think. You know, he was trained classically in piano. He took lessons for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And his mother made him go, and he really was a great classical piano player. But he always wanted to play rock and roll. So he was ashamed to tell people he played piano back then because he only knew Beethoven and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he liked all the groups like Yes and the keyboard groups and stuff.
Yeah.
And
Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yeah, Mr. Lake and Palmer and everything. And he loved to play that kind of stuff. He didn't know rock and roll till he got with us. We had to calm him down a little bit.
Get him away from the technical know-how, a little bit of feel, a little bit of boogie-woogie.
Along with several other songs from that first album, Free Bird would go on to become such a classic years later that you may not realize that Lynyrd Skynyrd did not catch on with the release of the Pronounced album in 1973. Far from it. Matter of fact, original Skynyrd bass player Leon Wilkeson was so certain that their collaboration with New York producer Al Kooper was a mistake that Leon quit the band to work in a dairy. In his last national radio interview before his death in July 2001, here's Leon Wilkeson with me in the studio.
Farm Best.
Foremost, wasn't it?
It was Farm Best, Dairy Products, and then it changed to Flavor Rich. I just decided to get out of music for a while, threw my guitar under the bed, and just felt that I needed to do something to get my parents more proud of me. So I had some friends that worked there a long time, and they were telling me how cool it was I could grow their hair and do some other mischievous things and get away with it. So, and it was like a childhood dream come true, because everything that a popsicle truck would drive around and sell, you could just get there at employee price, and kept my refrigerator well stocked. But the best part about it was the day that Bob Burns and Billy Powell stopped by my apartment. I'm going, wow, you know, I figured they'd forgotten me a long time ago by now, and it was great. They stopped in to see me, and they said, well, Ronnie sent us over here to come get you, and he said he was over here fishing, so I just went over and visited with him and fished with him, and he said that they had just completed the Pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd album with the song Free Bird on it. And he says, and Ed don't really want to play bass no more. He'd rather play guitar, because he did a lot of guitar overdose. So Ronnie said, we decided we want to have a three-guitar band, but we really don't have time to work in, you know, a whole bunch of bass players. So we decided to ask you first if you'd be interested. And I said, well, sure, man. When we start rehearsing? About 5 minutes? And I'll never forget, he handed me the fishing pole, and he told me right where to cast the line. And he said, I guarantee you, within less than a minute, you'll catch a fish. And sure enough, a fish bit on that hook. I reeled it in. I said, I consider that a good omen. And he said, I do too. I'll see you at rehearsal tomorrow. Be on time. So I was probably hours early. But anyway, so I had to go turn my uniform into the ice cream factory. Didn't have to work in that anymore, so I got get out and getting myself thawed out.
One of six original albums that have been remastered, packaged in the original artwork covers, pressed on premium vinyl, and boxed in a handsome set. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and a whole lot more online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Gary Rossington and Ed King for The Essential Lynyrd Skynyrd Part 1.
Hi, this is Gary Rossington.
Hi, this is Ed King of the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band with a second helping in the studio.
Turns out that Lynyrd Skynyrd leader Ronnie Van Zant had a clever plan of rock and roll diplomacy to get everybody exactly what they wanted, while strengthening the band even further, according to Ed King.
Ronnie and I used to live together, and I'm sitting on my bed playing this guitar, and he walks in the room and sits down in the bed next to me and puts his arm around me and goes, man... He said, I love you, but he said, man, you're just the worst bass player I've ever played with. And I knew in my heart he was right, because I listened to the album, and there's so many things that on the album that I just wasn't happy with as far as the bass part. It's like it was hard for me to get a feel for some of it, you know. So I said, well, what do you want to do? He said, look, let's go out and talk to Leon. He's working at an ice cream factory here in town, and we'll see if we can't talk him into coming back and switch you over to guitar. I said, all right. So I went out that night and talked Leon into coming back. 2 days later, we started a rehearsal with me on guitar. And that day, Ronnie and I wrote Sweet Home, Alabama, in rehearsal. So we were, I mean, I was inspired, you know. I was back on my main instrument, you know. And that night I went home, went to bed, and the entire guitar solo came to me in a dream, note for note. Yeah, that's why that guitar solo, I only changed two notes in the whole solo to this day, but the rest of it is note for note, because it came out in a dream, you know. I always sleep with a guitar next to the bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night after I'd heard this. And in my dream, I'd seen the fingerings and everything. It was very tangible. So I woke up, picked up the guitar, and it just fit so perfect. And I went out to rehearsal the next day, and it just, man, just fit like a glove, you know?
From Lynyrd Skynyrd's 1974 Second Helping album, That's Sweet Home Alabama. Gary Rossington and Leon Wilkerson reminded me that the topical lyrics were taken straight from the headlines in 1974, including references to then-Alabama Governor George Wallace, a one-time independent presidential candidate who became highly controversial because of his segregationist policies and views. Here's Gary and Leon.
Back then, it was like a joke, or not a joke, but everybody hated Wallace, except for a few people in the South. But a lot of his stuff was good, except for the stuff that begets black people, you know, and all that was wrong. But his other points in government, some of them were good, and Ronnie liked that. So he kind of was for Wallace and used to joke about being for Wallace. So he was saying, since y'all didn't vote for him, does your conscience bother you since you voted for Nixon and Nixon got kicked out, you know? He wrote way before his time that, and with things going on and with that song, All I Can Do Is Write It in a Song, he was talking about all this stuff way before it all happened, yeah.
Yeah, George Wallace to Ronnie was like a man's man, especially like after his assassination when he got shot and all. And he still carried on politics in a wheelchair.
Yes, yeah. At least he had a stand, you know. Yeah. He stood for something. I don't know. We never knew much about politics, so Ronnie just kind of wrote that as a joke, the same as the Neil Young verse, because we loved Neil Young and thought he was the best songwriter, and we loved all the records. We just didn't
big fans of Neil Young.
Yeah, we just toured Alabama and drove around all the back countries and loved the people and the towns and the countryside, so we didn't want nobody cutting it down, especially a Canadian. No offense to the Canadians out there.
With the hit Sweet Home Alabama, radio stations nationwide suddenly discovered this Southern rock band with the funny name. Lynyrd Skynyrd started making a few bucks for decent equipment to open for groups like The Who on their Quadrophenia tour. It wasn't that much earlier when Lynyrd Skynyrd had played through one single amplifier, according to guitarist Gary Rossington.
Plugged the singing into it, and the bass, and the guitars, and the lead guitar, and the rhythm, and even at sometimes drums, and we'd put a mic on the end, so everything came through one amp. Yes, and then when we really expanded after 2 years, we had two amps.
Oh!
But you know, that's probably what made us so good, because we had to start and kind of come up and build from there, and it makes you appreciate it, and makes
you want
to do more, you know, instead of getting it handed to you, we kind of really wanted it, and we would have died for it. Which we did.
It's true, they wanted it that bad. But at this point, all the members of Lynyrd Skynyrd had were their dreams, the talent that God gave them, and the open road beckoning ahead. Ed King was the only one with any previous experience out there, but he learned that Lynyrd Skynyrd could only have one leader, and that was the Cat in the Hat, Ronnie Van Zant. Here's Ed King.
There was one time in Tampa, Florida, we played Ronnie Laid Down the Law to Me. You know, he said, you know, you're a new kid on the block, you know, and things are going to be done my way. And he said it in no uncertain terms, and I just sat there and went, yep, yes, sir. Yeah. I got the message. That's all I can say. I didn't want to argue with him because I just felt he was right, you know. It was his band. Ronnie was Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Those six original albums have been remastered, packaged in original artwork covers, pressed on premium vinyl, and boxed in a handsome set. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Gary Rossington and Ed King for The Essential Lynyrd Skynyrd Part 1. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Gary Rossington and Ed King, and God bless Leon Wilkerson. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Annie Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.